Welcome to In the Moment. I am Keely Boltina in for Lori Walsh. Deadwood History Incorporated and the Deadwood Historic Preservation Commission host a lecture by local historian Larry Miller at noon on Thursday at the Homestake Adams Research and Cultural Center. Miller takes a look at the history of the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company. He joins us live now on the phone with more. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Keely. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thanks for talking with us today about this. But I have to start with a really obvious question. Why are we talking now about the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company when this is, 130 years ago? Why does it matter? Tell me.
Well, for a number of reasons, I think. Number one, it's part of our history. And I've always been a great believer in understanding the history of trying to get a grasp of particularly hydroelectric power, which continues to be a fairly important source of electric power for this country, not as much as elsewhere in the world, particularly in China and the Pacific Rim, but still at about 7% of renewable energy. That's important, and we still operate here in Spearfish. It's not the old Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company, but the old Homestake Number 1 continues to operate here in Spearfish, providing electricity, which is sold back to Black Hills Energy. But it's an interesting tale. As I first learned about the plant, the people, the challenges that they had, these were entrepreneurs, and this was not a huge hydro plant. It was a small one, but it predated some of the other hydro plants in the Black Hills by at least a decade. And there were a lot of visionary folks involved, a lot of controversy. And for anybody who thinks that we have interesting media relations today with public and private officials, the war between the city of Spearfish, and I call it a war, and it's probably overstating it, but there was a lot of hostility between the Spearfish Businessmen's Club and the Homestake Gold Mine back in the era when the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company had gotten off the ground and then went through a devastating flood.
And, okay, you set me up because I have to know now.
Sure, sure.
What that looked like. What was the war?
Well, the war, the media war that took place, and I probably need to give you just a little bit of background about the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company, because this came about in the late 1880s and then the early 90s. About 1892, the company was actually formed in 93, but the plant didn't get built up Spearfish Creek until about 1894, the summer of 1894. And these were local entrepreneurs from Spearfish, but they didn't have the capital necessary, so they were bringing in what they called foreign capitalists. By that, they meant anybody that lived outside of the area. And it was a guy by the name of Zietlow from Aberdeen who first came in and talked to the city. But, this thing stumbled around largely due to undercapitalization until a young man by the name of, hold on a second here. I want to talk about two people, and one is Zietlow, the other is George Favorite. There were other characters, but George Favorite, pardon the pun here, but George Favorite is my favorite. He was an early Spearfish mayor. And he also came from a wealthy family in Chicago. His father was an executive with the Armour Meatpacking Company. And he had come out here as a young man, a cattle rancher in Wyoming, finally found his way to Spearfish. And he's the guy that actually came up with the money that allowed them to buy the land up Spearfish Canyon to put the plant in, and he essentially became the owner and operator of the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company. And this is about 1894, and things went along pretty well. They had a good operation going. What did happen, it sort of changed things a bit. And again, this is a small plant, 75-kilowatt dynamo, a turbine, a very small plant.
Yeah, what does that look like? Help me understand what that means.
Well, what it means is that this is a very small facility. we're talking about probably something less than 1,400 square feet, the building. It was a stone building. No remnants of it left now, but there are some old pictures that show what it looked like. But this was a roughly 30 by 40 foot building, a 14 foot ceiling. They had to buy 275 poles that had been milled to carry the current from that little facility up the canyon to Spearfish. And this was gonna bring light to Spearfish. You know, there had been no light up to that time. And they were going to put six arc lights in downtown Spearfish, and then they were going to put lights into the hotel Spearfish. And it was all pretty exciting stuff. And when they finally did get on the air, not on the air, but when they activated the power plant and they got electricity into town, the electric lights were turned on, and the Queen City Mail said this, and I think of it as it's pretty interesting. The Queen City Mail wrote in their June 8th edition, this is 1894, only think of it, 18 years ago, the only lights seen in this part of the state were those of the sun, moon, and stars, with an occasional signal light, which was to call together Sioux warriors for a scalping picnic. Now, that was a Queen City Mail, 1894. So the plant was in full operation and doing pretty well. One of the persons who was involved at the operation of the plant observed that, and he was convinced of this, that with this dam and the flume that carried the water to the power plant and the power of Spearfish Creek, that it was capable of supplying sufficient power for all the machinery which has been or ever will be placed in the Black Hills.
Okay, well, so was it?
That was over the top, a bit okay. Overzealous, I think. But by 1896, there was lighting. In fact, some of the larger homes had to install their own meters. There hadn't been meters up to that time. And they said in 1896, there were 10 houses alone that were using over 230 lights. So it was beginning to grow. And by 1898, things were going so well that the owner, George Favorite, who had served as mayor and for 4 years, he was so popular because he helped to bring hydroelectric power to Spearfish. He got reelected, served a total of 4 years. But he died in 1899 while he was back in Washington, D.C. He was only 33 years old. And this is a guy who had he'd been president of the First National Bank in Spearfish. So he was quite an entrepreneur and one of the colorful characters. And I've been digging for a photograph of this guy for a long time, and I still don't have one. So if anybody's got old photographs tucked away somewhere of Northern Hills pioneers, although he was an immigrant from Chicago, George Favorite is one of the people who was key to bringing hydroelectric power into Spearfish.
Sure. Larry Miller, you are talking about the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company in the late 1890s. I just want to make sure our listeners are reminded of who we're talking to and why you have some expertise. And so with all of this setup then, it sounds like things were going swimmingly. What happened then? Because you mentioned some controversy.
Well, the controversies that happened, you know, Homestake Mine was the 500-pound gorilla in the Black Hills at that time. And about 1899 or thereabouts, Homestake was, they were buying up more and more property. They'd already acquired Spearfish Creek water rights from the Wyoming and Dakota Water Company. And there were big things happening. And just before Thanksgiving, around the holiday time of 1899, it was announced that the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company had been sold. And the buyer was reported to be the dentist in Leith, of all things. His name was Dr. Daniel Dickinson. There was no mention of the price. It was $18,000, and there was no background regarding Dr. Dickinson. Well, they really didn't have to print any background in the paper because it probably wasn't necessary. He had been the chief surgeon for the Homestake Mine, and he spearheaded their clinic and hospital for the mine. And that was more than just medicine. And in fact, he was more than just a doctor. In looking at some of the newspaper advertising, his name showed up as a director of the Black Hills and Fort Pierre Railroad, along with George Hurst, who owned the mine, the Homestake Mine, and Thomas Greer, who was the mine superintendent. And he and Greer also were directors on the First National Bank in Deadwood. So, you know, there were obvious ties and linkages, and I'm not going to pretend to understand what all of the interconnections were, but it was clear that Homestake Mine really had control of Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company. Well, by this time, the Spearfish Businessmen's Club was getting nervous about not having enough power to light up Spearfish, which was really beginning to grow. They formed a committee. They went over and met with Thomas Greer, the head of the mine, and the Queen City Mail said that Greer had, quote, acquiesced readily when he found that the Businessmen's Club was fathering the scheme. And that scheme was to move the plant closer to Spearfish and make it bigger. And Greer said he was going to do something in 60 days, but nothing happened in 60 days. And weeks dragged into months. And before you know it, they were into 1904, and nothing had happened. And the Queen City Mail wrote that Superintendent Greer has decided that Spearfish is not worth a good electric light plant. Last January, he promised a committee of citizens to move the plant and to increase the power. The work was to begin in 60 days. He deems that he's privileged to change his mind, like a woman. Now, this is the Queen City Mail in 1904, and they said that he had promised, but nothing had happened. Well, something did happen in 1904 that changed everything. And June 4th, 1904, there was a light rain that started in the northern Black Hills, and it caused some flooding. Creeks began to rise, and the rivers began to flood, and by the next day, Spearfish Creek had a flow of 5,000 cubic feet per second, and you have to understand the Geological Survey had just put a measurement device into Spearfish Creek, and that became a record that held until 1909 when there was another flood. Bear Butte Creek, Redwater, Whitewood Creek, all of the smaller creeks also overflowed. And it was a mess, and it ripped up and tore the guts out of the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company. Well, it was owned by the mine, Homestake Mine, and so they quickly decided that they were going to rebuild, and they did. And it was just as the folks in Spearfish wanted. It was down the canyon farther, on the edge of Spearfish, and in 1904, they put a new plant in. And so really what happened is Mother Nature did what the Spearfish Businessmen's Club was really never able to do, and that was to get Homestake to build their hydroelectric plant closer to Spearfish to serve Spearfish and the community. And, of course, what happened is that power plant did a lot more than just serve Spearfish. What the mine was starting to do was to plan for a much larger hydroelectric plant, and in 1908-1909 they started construction of a tunnel that would divert Spearfish Creek water from Maurice at about 5 miles up the canyon and go underground into Spearfish, which is where they built their 1911 hydroelectric plant, which was huge. But in order to tunnel through, they needed the power for the drills and for the ventilation system. And what they chose to do was to use that 1904 plant to provide the electricity for tunneling through up to Spearfish, which they accomplished in that period starting in 1909. In 1911, of course, the plant was finished up. And that's a remarkable story, I think. And that plant still stands today, adjacent to the park in south edge of Spearfish, still operating. Now, of course, it's owned by the city of Spearfish, which took control of it about 2003 or thereabouts, and it still functions. And it's interesting to me that when the city of Spearfish, and occasionally they will have public tours of that hydroelectric plant, and it seems to be the most popular historic site. When I went to that, when they celebrated the 125th anniversary here a few years ago, it was wall-to-wall people waiting to get into the hydroelectric plant. Of course, it was hard to hear anything, but they did have a room that was relatively soundproof, and with a good explanation about how the power plant functions, a bit of its history. And its history really all started, at least in my mind, by some entrepreneurs who were not a part of the Homestake mine, and this was not a Homestake community. We did have a lumber mill here that belonged to Homestake, and of course, number one plant. But it had never really been a company town like Lead, but it certainly had a lot of population, folks who were employed by Homestake Mine.
And a popular place now today, apparently. Larry Miller, we are running out of time. You can see Larry Miller's presentation about the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company at noon this Thursday at the Homestake Adams Research and Cultural Center. He takes a look at the history of the Spearfish Electric Light and Power Company well beyond what we're able to talk about today. Larry, thank you for your time.
Keely, my pleasure.